Pecco and Chime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. We're talking a lot of Sox, a lot of Rafael Devers so far on the program this morning. Taking you up to 3:05. Actually, it's this afternoon. What am I doing? It's not the morning. I was just so convinced we started at 11. We started at noon. It's the afternoon.
Well, we started at 11. We showed up here at 11.
Yeah, we were ready at 11.
And we were told, your time slot is radically different than what was on the schedule.
Yeah, it's not a two-hour show, three-hour show, and you start an hour later.
That's all right.
Hey, you know what? We're here. We're grinding away. It's a lot of fun. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in at all on the Rafael Devers situation and the Boston Red Sox. But, Mega, let's get into the dysfunction within the Red Sox organization. Between the June Lee report and then Buster Olney came out with information and Jeff Passan has had a huge article. What do you take away from all of this information that you've gotten about the Red Sox organization to this point?
We definitely need to get into the ongoing fight over what is AI and what is not considered AI.
Yeah.
We'll get into that with June Lee's original report from Yahoo Sports. But I want to go through just a couple pieces of the very long, well-reported piece by Jeff Passan.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a couple things that jump out about Craig Breslow that are a little concerning. Like, not just about this trade from Rafael Devers, but just about the operation down there at Fenway.
Yeah.
And Craig Breslow, like, he was billed as, hey, you had to go through a bunch of candidates who didn't want that job after seeing what they did with Heim Bloom. And then you get to Craig Breslow, and it's like, oh, this is Theo's guy. And Theo's going to be basically a consultant with the Red Sox now, too. So that should be a good indication. But some of these just details from Jeff Passan. Here's the first one that I want to bring to your attention. He writes, when Rafael Devers showed up at spring training, the team broached the idea of him shifting to designated hitter. Their computer model said the best version of the 2025 Red Sox would feature reigning minor league player of the year Christian Campbell at second base, Bregman at third, and Devers at DH. The computer model told them. Not Alex Cora, who spent, you know, all knows this team and was with them through spring training.
Yeah, but Cora was on board with this.
Well, did they tell him to get on board because they gave him a big fat contract last year?
He was the guy ranting and raving about how awesome Alex Bregman was. Mm-hmm. So I would presume.
Oh, he loves Bregman.
Yeah. And so by proxy, I would then assume that he also was fine with the idea of, yeah, Devers moves to DH, Bregman plays third, and Campbell at second. To me, that seems very logical.
Here's my issue. Okay, now we have Christian Campbell out in Worcester.
Yep.
Doing a little spot there trying to get his groove back. And we have Devers out of the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody, like, you don't need a computer model to tell you that Bregman should have played third base. All due respect to the people who think that Rafi Devers is this incredible talent.
100%
He's
agree.
A talented player, but there's no question there that Bregman
was
a better
hitting
third baseman.
Almost equally as good as Devers, if not better, and then is a better defensive third baseman.
But we're making all these decisions based on a computer model? Like, we've run simulations with all the different players, and this is going to be the best version of the Red Sox, and now look at it. You got Christian Campbell back in the minors.
Yeah, so, I mean, but
Just about the Devers thing, Shine.
No. But to be fair, like, the first month of the season, Christian Campbell was hitting really well. He has since slumped and probably wasn't ready to start break camp with the Major League team. Honestly, it probably should have been Marcelo Meyer, because just defensively, Marcelo Meyer brings more to the table than Christian Campbell.
Yeah, but the computer model probably didn't spit that out.
No, that's just, I don't think that that's true either.
Think it's true that that they were going off a computer model?
Not in this instance. Not when it comes to Campbell versus Meyer.
That's what it says in the report, though.
I understand, but when it comes to Campbell versus Meyer, the only reason Campbell was in the computer report is because he had a contract. He played ball on a contract. Marcelo Meyer did not. So to be honest with you, I bet Marcelo Meyer wasn't even included in their computer programs because he didn't play ball. If he was, it probably would have spit out, yeah, let's play Marcelo at second, Trevor at short, Bregman at third, and throw Devers at DH.
So here's another piece. This is an extended part of a quote that's been getting a lot of traction over the last day and a half when this piece came out. So early in Breslow's tenure as chief baseball officer, he hired a consulting firm called Sportsology Group to assess Boston's baseball operations department. We all remember that. Jen McCaffrey wrote a story a couple months ago kind of summarizing all the cuts that went through that. The wide-ranging evaluation was something out of Office Space, an attempt to cut the fat accumulated while Boston cycled through the head facets of baseball ops. It was clear to those who stayed and went. This was Breslow's team, and now he would remake it in his own image. Since the cuts, Breslow's circle of trust has been small, and his reliance on the team's analytical model heavy, according to sources, leaving some longtime employees embittered. Breslow loyalists fear the consequences of that, with one saying, quote, "There are definitely turncoats internally plotting against Brez." Does that sound functional to you?
No, it doesn't. But, like, I understand. So, again, I'm going to sound like the homer. I'm going to sound like the guy drinking the Kool-Aid. But to me, it sounds like a guy who is going in and trying to remove all of the older versions of this team, the prior iterations of this organization.
The winning iterations.
Not necessarily. I mean, Chaim Bloom didn't really win very much, did he?
No.
Exactly. And so there's still leftovers from him.
But we're not
talking about... Ben Cherington didn't win all that much either.
We're not talking about people necessarily from that era. We're talking about people who go back decades with this team.
I understand, but, like, Ben Cherington's name is literally in Passan's article. Like, that's a guy who had leftovers here. Like, he's removing that stuff from the team. And that's... I don't see a problem with that. Like... Dave Dombrowski has a very particular way about building a baseball team.
I like Dave Dombrowski's
way. I do too. I love Dave Dombrowski's
method. I'll take that any year.
I do. I agree with you. But if you're the GM of any sports organization and you come in and a guy like Dave Dombrowski was here at one point, won a championship, and then got ousted, you would probably also want to remove Dave Dombrowski loyalists from the organization because that's not how you run the organization. And you don't want them... impeding your process, right?
I'm going to sound paranoid and cynical. Okay?
Go for it.
I think that this is Breslow acting like Bain Capital, acting like Boston Consulting Group, bringing in this outside consulting group, saying which heads can roll. Look how much money I'm going to be able to show that I cut from these salaries to my boss, John Henry. And maybe that gets reallocated towards actual baseball players or somewhere that's more valuable. Like, I'll allow that to be possible. But I think that he's able to show that and at the same time morph it in his own image, which is very analytically driven and looking at computer models instead of listening to somebody who's been with the team for 20 years because he thinks that they're outdated and he would rather just do it the computer way.
And I think that's a fair view to have. I just think that...
And I don't like that.
No, and I get that, and that's fine. I don't... Like, I'm a nerd. I don't hate the computer model approach as much as a lot of people do. Like, I wish that there was more human element to it. I wish you could have... I prefer to find a balance between the two. I think analytics are really, really useful. But you also have to be able to recognize when and where and how to apply them as a person.
It should be concerning to fans who hear that Christian Campbell was on the opening day roster because a computer model demonstrated... to Craig Breslow that was the best move. And now he's down in the minors. That should be concerning to people.
I don't find that concerning though. Like when he broke camp with the team, didn't he win like rookie of the month in
April or
whatever?
But we're talking about
a
month. Now we're not even at the trade deadline and he's back in the minors.
I understand, but baseball players go through streaks like this all the time. Like sometimes guys find themselves in ruts and in slumps and they need to find their way out of it, especially a young player in the majors for the first time. Like guys getting called up and then getting set down and then coming back is not something new. Like that has happened throughout baseball for all the time. Like they were considering sending Jack Caglione, one of the top prospects in the Royal system, back down.
That they've managed him well?
No.
Christian Campbell.
Look, I think they're... could have been a lot of improvements in the handling of Christian Campbell. I don't disagree. And like I said, I think the only reason he broke camp with the team is because he played ball on a contract compared to Marcelo Meyer. Like, Marcelo Meyer should have been on the opening day roster, in my opinion. But he didn't play ball on a contract. He was left out of the computer model. Computer model said Christian Campbell should be on the opening day roster.
That's why it's stupid, Scheim. That's why it's stupid to go off a computer model. But like, there are human elements to sports that sounds like... One, that Breslow is not as interested in as the math of it.
Sure.
And two, is very alienating to people who have been with this organization for a long time. You can say, like, look on the bright side optimistically. Maybe this is trimming the fat, and these are people who have just been hanging around the organization and not getting with the times or not modernizing. But those are people who, some of them, actually won championships with this team. And Craig Breslow has not.
Like I recognize
he was on one championship team, pitched what, like in two innings?
Yeah, like, but when you look at, Bego, when you look at businesses in general, and I understand pro sports and regular businesses.
I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not going to do that. It's not a normal business.
I'm not talking about the players, though. But, like, when new leadership comes into a building in any business, like, they want to do things their way. They want to go about it their way. So a lot of the times, the people from leftover years from the past tend to, unfortunately, find the exit. Like, that's just the way in which life works. When new leadership comes in, they want their people in the building. And so sometimes leftovers lose their jobs. And that's what this is. To me, this is a lot of these people who are saying that Breslow is doing this. And, like, I would assume, this is my opinion, Passan is getting a lot of information.
You think it's like whistleblowers.
Bitter old employees.
Yeah.
Guys who were with Dombrowski or were with Theo Epstein and got their ass kicked out.
He admits that. He says in it, he says some of the employees have become very embittered.
Yeah,
like some of the ones who remain there. Not the ones who were just fired, cleaned out because the computer model says we don't need this position with the Red Sox anymore. People who are still there are embittered. There are people... He says that there are turncoats within the building. Like, it sounds like we're in the Revolutionary War in Fenway Park. How is that not concerning to you?
Of course it's concerning. The idea that there are quote-unquote turncoats in the building.
First of all, I absolutely love it. Please stay dysfunctional.
The drama is tremendous.
Like, the drama is so tremendous.
Phenomenal.
It's Real Housewives of Fenway Park.
But it feels
like, going.
It feels like Craig Breslow is one of the... Did you ever watch the show The Traitors on Peacock and NBC?
No, is it
good? You have to watch it, yeah.
I don't like competition shows if they're not drinking a lot. Because otherwise it's just like boring scheming and it always turns into somehow CrossFit.
Yeah, they drink a decent amount. Like, they show them constantly at the bar and with drinks in their hands.
But do they get in like drunk fights?
A little bit, not really. No,
okay.
No, that's fair.
Yeah.
But it feels like Craig Breslow is a faithful trying to suss out who the traitors are amongst the organization. And that to me is good drama. It's fun. But like, also, I get it. Like, new leadership comes in and they just want to do things their way. And there's people there who are the, you know, originals of the Dombrowski and the Epsteins and all those guys. And they're like, well, this guy's an idiot. All he does is use his computers. Like, well, this guy doesn't know what he's doing. And yet, to Breslow's credit, like, he's found some good things. Maybe it is just due to computer programs and them and AI is spitting out answers for him. But like, he's finding useful pieces. He's found some good pitching arms. Garrett Crochet is a phenomenal pitcher.
Yes.
It doesn't take a computer to tell me that. Aroldis Chapman has
nails.
Been awesome. Carlos Narvaez has been a good bring up. Like, for them, like, I think Breslow has done more good than bad so far. And regardless of the process, that's what we want, right? We just want results. At the end of the day, if the Boston Red Sox were to win a World Series this year or next year under Craig Breslow, what he does then, it becomes successful, right?
Yeah, you go like, wow, he's a nerd, but he's a ruthless nerd, and look what he did.
Yeah.
Look, he modernized the organization. I just maintain the perspective right now that if I'm working somewhere and you bring in one of those outside consulting firms and they start going line by line through the business. And again, this is like, sports businesses are not the same as our business,
sure,
or other businesses. If I'm an employee, that's not a good look. Like, that is a terrible look. I understand why people don't trust Craig Breslow, why they don't like how he's doing it. I would be concerned if I was a fan of the Red Sox.
617-779-7937. Before we hit trending, let's go to Lynn in New Hampshire quick. Go ahead, Lynn.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to put in, I think this has got so many different levels of complexity to it. And I think you're right, all the behind-the-scenes stuff may go is disturbing. And I still think there's all kinds of pieces that we'll never know. But the bottom line is, to me, the fact that he told his big boss, why don't you do your job? Like, things that he said along those lines, I don't see how this can tolerate that. I think that can't be tolerated. And they gave him chances. I mean, how many people get a boss flying in on a plane to negotiate with you? I mean, I don't know. I think I miss him and I loved him too. I just think there's just so many levels here. But from your end, it must be fascinating. I'm enjoying all of the discussion.
Thanks so much for the call, Lynn. I appreciate it. Yeah.
Yeah, calling out Craig Breslow. If there's anything that we're getting out of this, I thought Breslow was a little bit more of a stooge than he is. Like, it seems like Breslow may be wielding more power and in some kind of dynamic with John Henry that we underestimated so far. And it seems like those two are in lockstep and Cora is smart enough to fall in line with them.
Yep. Yeah, he It feels like Cora's kind of on the outside looking in, but he's smart enough to play along.
Yeah.
That's what it feels like.
For now,
right
at
now.
Least.
Yeah. Well, and we'll see how that goes. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. Mego and Shime here on WEEI taking you up until 3:05, right until Red Sox pregame as they get ready for game two against the San Francisco Giants. But right now, Jacob is going to get you caught up with what is trending in the world of sports. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. That was Jun Lee on NBC Sports Boston talking about his report from Yahoo Sports. That the Red Sox have had major dysfunction within the organization and that they used an AI bot to conduct several rounds of interviews with candidates looking for jobs within the organization. Mego, what was your reaction to reading about all of this dysfunction, the AI approach for the Red Sox hiring process?
So I immediately, when I heard that, I thought that has to be just how they get through resumes, right?
Yeah.
Like, that has to be the process of sorting out people who are wholly unqualified. But Jun Lee in there says that this is like five rounds of interviews that they do with an AI bot. And then the Red Sox took it so seriously that the following day they issued a statement saying that they use this. I'm going to have the exact name of the tool that
it's
they
HireVue,
use.
HireVue, I believe it is.
Yeah, HireVue, which is called Conversational AI. That helps them sort through the talent. They said they've been using AI bots to hire candidates, address the facts with this. Since 2012, the club has used HireVue to screen applicants for all roles across the organization. They're one of several MLB clubs who use this tool. It asks questions basically to answer, ask candidates to answer questions in a little video portions and then send it in. And then I guess, so like it's like a prompting yep. chat bot or something. Not a big deal to me when you actually go through it, if that's all that it is. I think it just feeds into, though, this sense that people have that I do agree with, which is you've gone too far with the analytics. Like the analytical side of baseball can sometimes be detrimental to running a company that or an organization that is so human based.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's why people got so worked up over the idea of an AI chatbot, because it's like you're going into interview with the Red Sox and you assume that it's somebody who's really experienced and talented and you'd want in your MLB front office. And then he's or she's going through five rounds of talking to a chatbot.
Especially for an organization who had to go through, what, like 11 candidates for the chief of baseball operations?
Right. And that's where I'm like, I think there's a little truth on both sides. Mm-hmm. Like, yes, okay, so the Red Sox admit that they use a chatbot for at least the opening round to sort through.
A lot of organizations and companies do
and
across the
And they
States.
Say that other MLB clubs do this too. Yep. So it's not just like, so it's been since 2012. So it's not some Craig Breslow
some
installation.
Correct.
At the same time, I'm like, is it just the opening round? Show us the process.
Yeah.
Show us the process, because I understand you're getting thousands of resumes for some of these open jobs. But at the same time, like, show us the process. If you have nothing to hide, show us what it's like to go through and the people that you meet with and who you talk to in the spirit of full transparency, because that's the only way that you're going to completely knock down what has become a big story. And people are going to be saying this for a while. Like,
oh, yeah.
They're going to be like, oh, the AI chatbot didn't know that Rafael Devers was a bad third baseman. Like, they're going to apply it to everything. It's one of those things that could haunt them while Craig Breslow's there.
Yeah, 100%. And it becomes, again, you're right. Like, there needs to be a human element in the running of any baseball operation. Like, there has to be some level of human communication, whether it's, you know, to lower level employees, to upper level employees. It doesn't really matter. Like, you can't. Like, jobs depend on human interaction a lot of the times. Like, it's just organizations feed off of it. Like, that's how you have thriving conversations and brainstorms and ideas and all of those things is the person-to-person contact. So the idea that, like, you're going through all this stuff, I don't have a problem with run this into the computer, stats print this out, and this is how we're going to kind of go about our play and play style and the number of pitches and stuff like that. But when it comes to like the actual operation and building those opinions and kind of building the organization in general, like there needs to be actual people doing that and not, you know, AI bots, because AI bots cannot understand the personality and creativity and chutzpah that somebody has just by
answering
a couple prompts.
Or if they're really weird. if they're really weird. Like, have you ever heard of the plane test? Like the flight test? I used to hear this from people that like some companies, especially high level, high paying organizations, will look at somebody as a flight test, which is, could you sit next to this person on a cross country flight if you
had to?
Yeah. And if we can't, if we can't see that, we're not going to hire you because there's so many applicants and you're obnoxious and there's something weird about you.
Yeah. You know, I don't care if you have a degree from Harvard.
Can
if you
AI
can't
bot
have a conversation
tell that you're creepy?
Me.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Somebody texted in as someone who's going through a job search right now. It's incredibly disrespectful to the amount of time and effort we put in. I agree, but being in the job search sucks. Yeah. Like, you're in, there's nothing that's more disrespectful than applying for
and then you
a
get
job.
That generic email,
yeah.
Like, we're
if that. Yeah. If you get that back. Oh, yeah.
Tell me about it.
Like, it's rough. You are at the mercy of HR or the HR bot or whatever's going
Higher
through
view.
It. But that's kind of the reality of it. Yeah, it is disrespectful. Like, remember when we all were told that we had to write these stupid cover letters for every position? Like, did anyone ever read those?
No. It probably gets input into an AI, and they're like, how does this sound?
And people, you know what? I think you should be allowed now just to write your cover letters with AI, too. Oh, so yeah. It's AI talking to the AI, and no people are involved.
ChatGPT, write my cover letter, please. Like, that's honestly, like, that's exactly what people need to start doing. Just use ChatGPT. Have them write the cover letter. Make it so that the hiring AI recognizes it as a good cover letter, and then you get through the
Seriously,
first stage.
I would like it if we found out that somebody went in and programmed the AI bot to, like, insult you as you're going through it. Like, how they used to have those.
This is a terrible resume.
They used to have those goofy restaurants where they'd be, like, rude to you as they serve. Like, I want the AI bot to just be, like, just insulting the person going through the process.
Just absolutely just scorching them.
Yeah.
That would be hilarious.
Safety, school.
You, sir, should enroll in Clown Academy.
Stupid.
Maybe go work the fry later. Let's go take Jim in Annapolis. I want to talk about Rafael Devers. Go ahead, Jim.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
So this is what I see when I see Rafael Devers. So, and this is from spring training. He is an out-of-shape, one-tool player with a bad attitude, toxic attitude probably. Doesn't run to first base. Has an inflated ego. Terrible fielder. And you're paying him $30 million a year. By the way, this contract, I believe I'm right. This is a nightmare that would go on after he's retired. I believe his contract calls for him to be paid $7.5 million a year after he's retired for some number of years, 5 or 6 years or something. This is a nightmare that would go on into another generation. We're so lucky to get rid of him, I think. And plus, he was playing in Fenway Park, which is an ideal place for him to play and hit. Now he's playing in San Francisco. Look at the dimensions of those two parks. So he's going to be hitting balls that would be doubles off the wall here that will be flyouts there, etc. I think I'm so thankful for the San Francisco Giants to take this guy. By the way, I think this is payback to the Giants for giving us Pablo Sandoval. I think Devers is in a few years going to be Pablo Sandoval, a 300-pound disaster.
Okay, Jim.
I'm so happy he's gone.
Thanks for the call. I think Jim has the same opinion as a lot of people. Yeah, there's 9 years of deferred money on Devers' contract when it is up, by the way. He was right. And so, look, I think that could be true. I also think that Devers could go out and continue to hit, you know, 30-ish home runs. And
his numbers are definitely going to be worse now that he's playing in San Francisco in that park. 100%, I agree. I think anybody would agree with that.
Yeah.
Like, in at least at those home games, he's gonna look worse. But I don't, like, I do think a big part of it is that he comported himself so poorly with the media publicly. And
100%.
I think that's the hook for a lot of people, is they're like, I just don't like this guy.
No.
So he's gone now. Good riddance.
And nobody wants, as much as most of the time, I feel like a lot of time we side with the players. But when you come out and you're like, yeah, it's the GM needs to go trade for guys. I'm not doing that. Like, you tell the next thing you know, he's going to make me play the outfield. Like, no, that's just stupid.
Yeah,
nobody's going to ask you to play the outfield.
He acted like a jerk. Like, nobody, that didn't look good for
anybody. It rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
It didn't look good for anybody. So the only thing is, the Red Sox do have this pattern, this tendency to have fall guys. And I do think, in some sense, Devers has become another fall guy. Like, Heimblum was a fall guy. We wondered if Craig Breslow was going to be a fall guy at some point, because it looked like last season he was following in the footsteps of Heim in a lot of ways.
So if this team is bad, I would agree with you. Like, he will end up being the scapegoat. But, I mean, the trajectory they're currently on, if they continue to get better, like, and they're in the playoffs, then they're going to be like, look, see, we were right.
Right.
We shipped off Devers, and we were right. And everybody's going to have to kind of be okay with that.
Absolutely. Like, I agree. Like, they would, if they are in the playoffs and they do just do something.
Yeah, just exist in the playoffs.
Do something there, then it will look like it was the right move, especially because I agree. Like, Devers is not going to age well.
No.
As a player.
No, he's not.
He's not. And it's, and
especially if he wants to play the field.
Here's the other part, though. The contract isn't going to age as poorly as people think. Because the contracts balloon and balloon and balloon.
Yeah, I mean, so you as saw much the Juan as
you're,
Soto deal.
Yeah, as much as you're upset about, hey, there's this deferred money that's going to be paid forever, whatever. Like, 3 years from now, the contract compared to the contract that's being given out to other players is going to look rational.
Yeah, and you brought it up earlier. Like, the only reason people hate the contract is because you see what you gave Rafael Devers and then you shipped him away, where it, if you had just been had any kind of foresight, you could have just given that kind of contract to Mookie Betts and been better off for it, and everybody would have been happier, and this would never have been the issue that is it has become, because you wouldn't have traded a generational player for basically nothing.
Can we go to Justin in Medford, because
yeah,
I want to hear this story.
Yeah, so this is just real quick on the AI chatbot hiring thing. So my wife and I were looking for jobs over the past couple of years, and my wife used ChatGPT to write every single one of her cover letters, and I still did them all by hand just because I thought, hey, that's what should be done. My wife works at Harvard, and I wait tables.
Okay.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with waiting tables. Waiting tables is a great profession.
Well, no, nothing wrong with it. I absolutely love it. It's great, but that's just, you know. I just thought it was pretty funny.
I appreciate the call, Justin. That is
interesting. Can I ask you real quick, do you have to write cover letters for restaurant jobs?
No, I think that's his point, is all the cover letter jobs he wrote, or jobs he wrote cover letters for, probably didn't work out, whereas the ChatGPT ones did, and so he resorted to working at a restaurant where she's working at Harvard.
Well, working at Harvard, there's a lot of Harvard jobs.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it's the best job. No, I don't.
But,
I haven't had to write a cover letter in a while,
yeah.
So I can't. Have you ever written a cover letter?
Yeah, I've written a couple.
Did you write one when you started working here?
No. I got hired from being an intern, so I didn't have
okay.
to, basically, because I was already, like, here.
I can't believe they're still making people do that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, they make you write cover letters.
Stupid.
All over the place.
So pointless.
My mom was in HR for years and years and years, and she's like, that's just... She's like, a lot of the time, she's like, I would bet most people don't even look at them.
Exactly. It's like, oh, did you do it? Okay. There's
yeah.
a cover letter.
It's
Let
like,
me flip past
yeah,
that.
It's a homework assignment where you just get credit for doing it and you didn't actually get a grade on it. It's just like, completed. Check.
Such a waste of time.
I totally agree. 617-779-7937. Johnny in Saugus wants to talk about AI. Go ahead, Johnny.
Hey, Shimer. Great weekend. Nice to see you on Thursday night.
Heck yeah.
AI is so weird, Mego. I asked my wife about my bicycle in the basement that has the dented tire. I'm like, I got to send my bike in to get fixed and tuned up for the summer. I swear to you, 2 hours later, I put my phone on and Ace Wheel Works in Watertown was like the ads on my phone. I had never Googled it, nothing. I just talked about it. It's so scary, these phones. I'm a little older than you guys, so I'm old school.
No, but Johnny, you're right. Like, that's not as much AI. It's more so just, like, marketing.
It's just your phone's listening.
Yeah,
device.
Your phone's listening, and so then you get ads directly related to you.
I've been so conditioned to that, where I've been in it freaked me out the first time it happened to me, too.
Yep.
Having a conversation with a friend about a watch that my brother got. And I didn't even say the name of the brand. I just described the watch to her because mm-hmm. it was a goofy looking watch. And then it came up as an ad on my phone on some, you know, like I don't know, Instagram or something. And I'm like, yep, okay. Now at this point, I'm like, it's listening to every single thing I say.
I see it
for
the most.
Sure.
I see 100%. I see it the most with my Instagram ads all the time, because I had not even started like looking into suits and stuff for my wedding, upcoming wedding in next spring. I had only talked about it with my fiance. And then all of a sudden I started getting suit-related ads all over the place on my Instagram.
The thing is, like, it can be pretty harmful to some people where, because they have so much of your information, all these big companies, and based on your purchasing, and they sell your information to all these lists and everything. Like, from a woman's perspective, there are couples out there who struggle with fertility, and now that information gets sold, and then those people get targeted, like,
targeted
baby,
ads.
Baby stuff. Yep. And I'm like, that's horrible.
Yeah, that's
That's like a capitalist nightmare right there.
Yeah, but that's, you know what, Mego? That's what they do. Mego, I would like...
I don't know how we got on that from Craig Breslow.
I don't either.
Basically, like, we just need to keep humanity grounded
because
AI freaks out all of us, and we're all just slowly watching AI creep into everything, and we're like, this is fine, right? We're the dog sitting in the fire in the room going, yeah, we all think this is pretty bad, but it's going to be fine,
hey, this
right?
This is fine. So I got to ask you, I have a non-sports related question that I want your answer to. We're going to do that next. Take a quick little break from Devers and the Red Sox for just like 5 minutes. I want you to think on this. I was driving into work today. Windows are down. Sun's out. Beautiful day. And the thought crossed my mind, what are your, like, top five kind of summer soundtracks? Like, the music that just make you feel like, and know, oh, this is summer. Like, it's the best time of the year. It's the perfect time of the year. The weather's beautiful. That kind of stuff. I want your take on that. We did, a while back, we did our five movies that make you think of summer and feel like summer. That's what I want your opinion on when it comes to music. Coming up next here. 617-779-7937. It's Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Here till 3:05, taking it right up until Red Sox pregame on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Great rejoin, Jacob. Well done by you. I had a question for Mego because I was thinking about it on my drive-in, and I was just curious where kind of other people were with this, because it is just sometimes you just listen to music and it just feels like summer. It makes you think of summer. It makes you think of being outside. Whatever your vision of summer is, whether it's at a barbecue or on a boat on the ocean or a lake or, you know, driving through the states, whatever you're doing. You camp, exactly. Things of that nature. So, Mego, I'm curious, what music makes you feel like summer?
90s. Just anything 90s. Really, okay. Like 90s pop music, specifically the one-hit wonder song of summer variety, always makes me, like, you know, brings back memories of being a kid, just being driven around everywhere, trying to go to, like, swim practice, trying to go to basketball camp, you know. So the really bad 90s one-hit wonder, like LFO,
ooh, Summer Girls.
I like Girls That Wear Abercrombie and Fitch.
Great song.
Chinese Banger. Food makes me sick.
Yeah.
I mean, bars like that.
Yeah.
You just don't forget. Do you remember one that always gets me because it was just huge for one summer? Do you remember that song, How Bizarre?
Yeah. How Bizarre.
How Bizarre.
OMC or something like that is the name of the artist, I think.
Yeah.
I forget.
And
but yes.
Sings with a weird accent. Like that. That kind of song just will always make me feel like summer because it's just like some weird 90s song. You never know the name of the band. And Len, do you remember Steal My Sunshine?
Yeah, of course.
All those terrible one-hit wonders. And then I'd also say anything by Hootie and the Blowfish.
Great again, choice.
90s feels immediately summer to
yes.
me. Anything Hootie makes me feel like a kid in summer. And then honestly, I'm not a big country music person, especially like very mainstream, like commercialized country, but just the age that I was growing up, anything Shania Twain.
Ooh,
if Shania Twain comes on, 90s era Shania, I'm like, I might as well be at my friend's pool party. Like, let's go, girls.
For me, in the country realm, for me, it was Kenny Chesney.
Mm.
My dad was a big Kenny Chesney guy. He had a couple of the Kenny Chesney albums. And so, like, summer cookouts, my dad had one of those, like, five CD players. He'd have it fully loaded, and it would just rotate throughout the day. And that's
what
you got.
Was it one of those ones where you turn it on and it said hello to you
on the screen? No. We weren't that fancy.
I had a boom box where when you turn it on, it said hello. And I was like, I live in the future. This is an AI boom box.
I can remember he would open the back window and stick the speakers in the window so it would play out under the backyard. Kenny. And then as I grew up, too, I went to Country Fest like every year for five or six years.
Which seems really fun.
it was a blast.
Like, I'm not a big country music fan, but those festivals seem
fun. Yeah, but if you're into tailgating and just, like, hanging out with friends and cooking food on the grill and drinking a lot, it's the perfect thing to do in your young 20s. And, like, for years, they sold those, like, country mega tickets or super tickets or whatever it was, and you could buy, for, like, $250, you got tickets to, I want to say it was, like, 7 concerts.
Okay.
And Country Fest would always be the last one of the year, and you'd go, and it was the best. I love it. So Kenny Chesney, to me, if you're talking country music, is what screams summer. Also, the reason I even thought of it was, for me, Bob Seger is just, it's as summer as it gets.
Yeah. Like, I can feel it.
Like, Night Moves is the, you know, the popular one. But for me, Sunspot Baby, which
is
we
Bob
led the show
Seger
off with.
Is Bob Seger Against the Wind?
Yep.
That's Against the Wind.
Turn the Page.
Against the Wind.
Like a Rock.
Yeah, I mean, if you go into that genre, like, obviously Springsteen will always have major summer vibes.
100%. That was
1,000%. But, like, I almost feel like if I'm thinking about what specifically makes me feel emotionally like summer, mm-hmm. it's that 90s era bad one-hit wonders. Because that was just the stuff my parents would always have the radio on if we were outside at the pool, if we were driving somewhere. Always, you know, the whatever mix station that we had in D.C., and it would just be those songs on repeat for an entire summer.
So I know you may be jaded by this because I think your husband is a massive Allman Brothers fan, right?
Oh, yeah. He loves Allman Brothers.
To me, Allman Brothers, like that ZZ Top, Lynyrd Skynyrd, Southern Rock, also to me screams summer.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like,
I'd agree
me,
with that.
A lot of that to me is like boat music. Like, that's what I want to listen to when I'm on a boat.
Yeah, what I'm not into, which has become very popular, I think, now to be kind of ironically into, is yacht rock. Like, lots of people will be like, I love
even people
yacht
my
rock.
Age are into that right now.
Yeah, I feel like the Bill Simmons documentary,
it's
too.
Like it's an ironic obsession that people have, and I just don't like that music.
That's fair. I think there's some of it I think is really, really good, and then other of it...
Like what would you say is peak yacht rock?
Jackson Browne to me is...
Jackson Browne?
Yeah.
I don't think of him as yacht rock.
Christopher Cross, Sailing.
I thought Sailing was Styx.
No, that's
Sailing Away.
That's a different song.
How many Sailing
that's
songs
Sail Away,
are?
But wait, Sailing by Christopher Cross.
What's the
starts
one?
Really, really slow and.
What's the one? Is it a Rod Stewart song that's like the rhythm of my heart? Do you know that one?
No, I can't say I'm a huge Rod Stewart.
That's
guy.
Another like Sailing.
Okay,
song.
What's the other one? Ride Like the Wind.
I don't know
who's that by Christopher Cross. That's what I thought. Christopher Cross screams yacht rock to me.
I don't even know who that is. I feel very ignorant over here.
It's okay. You know, it's all
I
right.
I just think of like Michael Bolton. R.I.P.
So, okay,
didn't
hold
he
on.
Just, did
so
he
Michael
just
Bolton
die?
To me is not yacht rock. You and I think are that's I think that's the miscommunication.
Since
the,
it's very big among
here.
Jacob's crew.
Yes.
Jacob, what do you define as yacht rock?
I mean, I would say kind of like the Doobie Brothers would be a good example.
Okay.
I feel like the Doobie Brothers are a little bit more like, I don't know, classic.
Like Allman Brothers, like.
Classic rock than yacht rock.
Yeah, almost like Southern classic rock. Yeah, that's how I feel as well.
Okay, I'm going to Google yacht rock.
No one
bands.
Knows what yacht rock actually
I know,
is.
Now I
it's
feel
It's just
dumb
this
about
amorphous
it.
Thing. It's
Steely
like,
Dan?
Yeah, Steely Dan, very
yes,
much
that's
so.
A great
yes.
example.
Reeling in the Years,
Toto?
Steely Dan, excellent.
Does anyone know a Toto song besides Africa?
Hold yeah, the Line.
Hold the Line, great.
Oh, okay.
Well done, Jacob.
There you go.
Good work. Toto's great. I don't know
They're
that
actually
I
actually a three-hit wonder.
Kenny Loggins? I hate that.
Kenny Loggins is great.
I'm sorry, I hate that.
Danger Zone, such a good song.
So dumb.
John in Maine wants to talk about summer music. Go ahead, John.
Hey, this is John from Saco, Maine. So first thing that comes to mind for me is Bob Marley.
Ooh,
second
okay.
is like kind of cross between like Sublime and 311.
Okay, John, I hate to profile you. Love you. Thanks so much for the call. I have a feeling John and Wiggy would get along very well.
He enjoys vegetation.
Yes. He enjoys the gifts that Earth provides for
I
him.
Hate 311. I hate
fair.
That band so much.
I can't say I'm a huge fan.
I had a group of friends in high school who were so into 311, and that music has aged like milk. That it is so
like
bad.
Milk.
Like
the only 311 song I really like is Amber.
It's so.
It's the only one.
Amber is the color of your energy. The text line is asking us to stop singing. 311.
Yeah,
sucks.
No kidding. We can't sing. That's why we're on the radio.
Oh my god, I hate that band. Yeah. If I like, they're like one step away from Linkin Park and less interesting.
Oh, you don't like Linkin Park?
No, I think Linkin Park's like okay.
Linkin Park is fun to make fun of.
Yeah, I liked when Linkin Park did that crossover where they
had Chester Bennington.
Yeah, they had the songs with Jay-Z from the Black Album.
Encore Numb.
That was pretty good.
That was on like every that. Like high school sports playlist.
Oh, it's still
playlist.
On my running playlist.
Yeah, it has to be. That song rips.
Yeah.
I liked not to be that guy. I liked it like old Linkin Park where they were kind of a little bit more metal-y. Like not like metal, but like as the adjective metal, you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
When you say, oh, that's metal, like that kind of metal, not like actual metal music.
311 was like the reggae version of new rock, like new metal. And I hated that. And
that's
I hated
fair.
All new metal and like Korn and that stuff was so Slipknot.
That's the Rich Keith
so
Avenue.
Not
I don't,
for me.
No,
like
me
I cannot stand that stuff. And I felt like 311 was just a weird kind of like half brother branch of that.
401 text. My buddy plays guitar in a band called Yachtly Crew.
All right, that's pretty good.
That's awesome.
That's pretty good. Where are they playing? Shout out Yachtly Crew.
Yeah, shout out to Yachtly Crew.
Now I kind of want to go to a Yachtly Crew live show tonight.
I kind of do too. Are they playing it like down at like Levitate Music Festival or something coming up in Marshfield? Who knows? We'll see. 617-779-7937. I promise we'll get back into sports. Michael McDonald, also good point. Yacht Rock, Michael McDonald, absolutely.
What is Michael McDonald saying?
I mean, he did a rendition of Ain't No Mountain High Enough. I know that.
Intern Jacob / turn producer Jacob.
He was also in the Doobie Brothers. That's why.
Do you know any
of familiar?
Do you know any of those songs from the 90s I said earlier? Like the How Bizarre song?
Yeah, I know that song.
That one has lived on?
Yeah.
He knows.
Incredible.
I bet he knows Tub Thumping.
Do you know Tub Thumping? That was my first CD.
We've played that on this show before.
Yes.
Yes, we have.
I've said again, like we need more Tub Thumping in sports.
Yeah.
But that's not a summery song to me.
No, that's an all-year song.
Yeah. Tub Thumping knows no season.
No, it doesn't.
It's a Christmas song.
617-779-7937. It's Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original.